I said this morning that we were going to look a little bit at tonight at the role of women or the position of women in Islam. It could be short. I could tell you very quickly, as you know, keep them covered up and closed up and marry as many as you want and go on about your business. But we're going to say more than that. That's what he said a while ago, yes. On the one hand, when it comes to Islam and women, on the one hand, in Surah 16:97, to whoever does good deeds, man or woman, and is a believer, we shall assuredly give a good life, and we will bestow upon them their reward according to the best of their works. On the other hand, in Surah 2, verse 282, it kind of has some long chapters there sometimes. It's half a page, one verse. Believers, when you contract a debt for a stated term, put it down in writing. Have a scribe write it down with fairness between you. No scribe should refuse to write. Let him write as God has taught him. Let the debtor dictate, and let him fear God his Lord and not diminish the debt at all. If the debtor is weak in mind or body or unable to dictate, then in fairness let his guardian dictate for him. Call in two of your men as witnesses, but if two men cannot be found, then call one man and two women out of those you approve of as witnesses, so that if one of the two women should forget, the other can remind her. In other words, women's testimony in court is worth half that of a man. In Surah 2, verse 223 concerning women and concerning wives. Your wives are your fields. Go then into your fields as you will. Send ahead some good for yourself and fear God and know that you shall meet him and give good tidings to the believers. In other words, we talked about marriages of convenience, or the Shia call them marriages for enjoyment. That is a part of that whole idea of marriages for convenience.
And applied to Muhammad's wife, because it seemed to me like what you tell me, she was pretty aggressive and such.
The first one was, and then when she died, and we'll talk in a they were married for 25 years, and when she died, then supposedly in a vision, he got a special dispensation from God to marry as many women as he wanted to.
I did too, and it was one.
But in Surah 4:34, men are protectors of women, because God has made some of them excel others and because they spend their wealth on them. In other words, men are protectors of women and they should be over them because they spend their money on them. So virtuous women are obedient and guard in the husband's absence what God would have them guard. As for those from whom you apprehend infidelity, and what they're guarding is, they're guarding their bodies, etc., and they keep them covered. As for those who from you apprehend infidelity, admonish them, then refuse to share their beds, and finally, beat them. Then if they obey you, take no further action against them, for God is high and great. At first you admonish them, and then if they don't listen, the Quran says to beat them. Does she have the lock to the gun cabinet?
She got 911.
That's true. So when it comes to women, once again, Quran on the one hand says if they're virtuous, treat them well and protect them, and on the other hand says if they're not, beat them. And go into them as you please, not as the woman pleases. Muhammad also said that in the hadith, Muhammad also taught that most of the persons found in hell will be poor. And dare I say it, and women. That's what Muhammad taught. That most of the people in hell will be poor and women. Because these are special virgins that are made by God and kept for them, the houris in paradise. Marriage is the most important element in Islam after the Shahada, the confession, but it is not a sacrament that's made in heaven. Marriage in Islam, marriage is a social contract with certain rights, roles, responsibilities, and obligations. It is not marriage between a man and a woman because God ordained marriage. It's a social contract.
This is a cult. It's not a religion.
No.
And they say because life is Islam and Islam is life, marriage is supposed to be permanent. In Muslim countries, when it comes to dating in Muslim countries, and maybe a lot of times it ought to be the case here, and my oldest son would think so, you must have a chaperone. You can't go out on a date by yourself. Girls cannot date without a chaperone. And they're allowed very little alone time. In conservative Muslim countries, marriages are still arranged. And sometimes those marriages are between young people. Muhammad introduced the wedding sermon to Islamic. Before that, there was not a wedding sermon. But the wedding sermon is delivered by the groom. And the bride is to stand there and accept and affirm that she's accepting his words. And is expected to listen and agree to everything that he says in the sermon for her to do. Well, but because they say, you know, this is God's order for the world. And of course, you have to remember, like most world religions, it was a male dominant religion. And in this particular instance, the male dominance was to the point of violence, if necessary, and that it was seen as a sin against God. The women who are in hell are the ones who not only disobey God, but they disobey God by disobeying their husbands. Now, even today, a dowry is expected. It's a nuptial gift. However, the dowry is not paid to the man by the woman's family. The dowry is paid to the woman by the man who is going to be the husband. And if the marriage ends in divorce, she gets to keep it. If you know, he divorces her. I divorce you three times in front of witnesses for whatever reason or no reason. But the dowry, he can't hold the dowry until later in life. The dowry has to be paid in full before the marriage is consummated. And so she kind of puts that aside, I guess, as a nest egg.
Is that a contract amount?
Do what?
Is that a contract?
No, it's not a contract amount. It's an amount that you agree on. And once that is written out. And then you get that amount. The man pays the woman that amount and she does whatever she wills with it. Generally puts it aside in a bank account or whatever. A man can divorce a woman, once again, by saying three times, I divorce you in front of witnesses, Muslim witnesses, not non-Muslim witnesses, and he doesn't have to give a reason. Women in the late 20th century, in some countries where, not very conservative Muslim countries, but in some countries, even in the United States, occasionally, women can, but they rarely do because of stigmas. And where men can say, I divorce you three times in front of witnesses, a woman has to go through an extremely long, it takes months to years to go through an extremely long legal path in order to do so. Now, people, when you think about women in Islam, I've already told you, men can be married to up to four women at the same time. But a Muslim woman can only be married to one man at any given time. We call it polygamy, but actually, it's polygyny. G-Y-N-Y, because it's, in polygamy, a woman can have multiple husbands, and a man can have multiple wives. But polygyny, only the man is allowed to have multiple wives. It doesn't go the other way. And in actually in the Surah 4, verse 3, if you fear that you cannot deal fairly with orphan girls, then you may marry women of your choice, two or three or four. But if you fear that you might not be able to treat them with equal fairness, then only one, or from among those whom you rightfully possess as your own. So you can marry two, three, four women. But there are rules. You have to treat them equally. You have to treat them the same. In fact, it began, this idea of multiple marriages with Muhammad began, and of course he says that it came from the Quran, the recitation. Allah told him that this was allowable because of so many Muslim men who were married that were getting killed in battle. And it was an act of kindness then for another man to marry the widows that were left behind, or to marry the daughters of those men that were left behind, and thereby provide for them. And there are certain prerequisites in Islam to marrying multiple women. First, the first wife has to agree to the marriage. She has to agree that you can marry another woman. Secondly, later wives are not to cause any distress to the previous, to the earlier wives. So a later wife, the third wife isn't supposed to nya-nya at the first wife and cause her any kind of grief. Three, equal time is to be given to each, though equal intimacy is not required. Four, all wives must be treated equally as far as homes, provision of food, clothing, gifts. A man spends a night with each one in turn unless a wife foregoes her turn. So if a man is married to four women, he starts with number one on Monday and number two on Tuesday, number three on Wednesday, number four on Thursday, and back to number one again on Friday. Well, he has to, if he is wealthy, he will provide, you know, but it'll be like in a compound. So he doesn't have to go all that far. However, if he has a large home, he can have wings or have particular rooms that are designated for each wife. Or I guess kind of like Mary ran across that sister wives thing a couple of years ago and watched about three or four episodes. I said, why? She said, these people are crazy. I just wanted to see what. And yeah, but I think initially they all lived in the same compound, and he'd just share rooms with different ones of them. If the man's poor, he's not going to be married to four. Now, Muhammad was monogamous with his first wife. However, when she died, he got a special dispensation from Allah allowing him an unlimited number of wives, and he actually married 11 other women. Wow. And he married some for love. He married some for tribal leverage. Leverage, you know, within the tribes, different tribes. Some for political advantage. But then again, Muslims point to two major figures in the Old Testament that had multiple wives and who were Solomon was one and David was the other. And they say, see, and they say that, and of course they say that David was a Muslim and Solomon was a Muslim. And so Allah allowed them to have that. Therefore, Allah gave Muhammad the special dispensation to do this.
You first started talking about that. I was going to ask you, was Solomon Muslim?
He wasn't, according to the biblical text.
It didn't start till.
Yeah, that's right. Till the 6th century AD. But their claim is that, but as I've said before, the claim among Muslims is that actually Adam was the first Muslim, that Allah created him, and he actually had a copy of the Quran. And once again, I raise the question, but he had a copy of the Quran, and it doesn't show up until the 600s. How can that be?
He can't be hated.
Question. Yes.
If Muhammad was married and had 11 wives, whatever, he only had four at one time, he divorced them.
Actually, he ended up with four. One died. He got, but at one point in time, he actually had more than four. But that was part of the special dispensation because of who he was, the final great prophet. He was right. Yeah. And the age of his wives and the age of wives vary. Muhammad gave his daughter Fatima to his cousin, who then became his brother-in-law. I guess that's kind of like that song, "My Grandmama's My Mama and My Aunt Too." But he gave Fatima to Ali, who was the one that the Shiites said should have been named his successor, but he didn't get there till the fourth one, when she was 12 years old. Muhammad's favorite wife after his first wife died was Aisha. Muhammad married her when she was six. He gave the dowry to her and consummated the marriage when she was 9 years old. Yeah. That's, you know. So, you know. Yeah. And there is no age limit. Unless you're in a country or a state that has an age limit. The minimum age to get married is such, there is no age limit upon whom a man may marry within Islam. No.
Well, now, is that still true?
Yes.
Well, if I come to the United States,
if state law says that you can't get married for you before they're 15, legally they can't marry one before 15. Well, what happens is, and that's a very good question. Actually, there was a Supreme Court case back in, was it the 70s or early 80s? Can't remember the specific date now, but there was a Supreme Court case with that, and the Supreme Court, I can't remember if it was State Supreme Court or the Supreme Court of the land, determined that it actually broke federal law in the United States. And that person was punished. The man was punished with prison time. However, what has happened since is a social contract. There will be a marriage that is performed in a religious ceremony and filed with whatever county, etc. And that's a legal marriage. And then there will be these marriages of convenience or social contracts that will be drawn up so that they're almost a common law thing, but they're not really recognized as such. It's a social contract. Well, they did, and Brigham Young's the one that really pushed that. But and that's another thing. I can't understand a sister wives thing on TV, and a guy's not in prison for being married to four women at once. But that's, as I've said to folks before, I watched that Moonshine Show one season a few years ago, and you know, I think, you know, they had guys embedded with the Revenuers and guys embedded with the Shiners, and I think they had two-way radios, and hey, we're within a half a mile. You guys need to get out of there. We got to have three more episodes. Yeah. Kind of thing.
What about these that come into the country and they have five wives and bring men? Are they required to abide by the law and have to do
something? No. They still, and what will happen is they won't come here for citizenship. They'll come here on some other kind of visa. So they, and especially if they're diplomats, they can't be touched. But so you know, there are all those kinds of things like that. The and as I said a while ago, since David and Solomon had many wives, they said, "Well, see, Allah approved it there, so Allah approves it now." If you're good, and that Muhammad was correct. Robert Spencer, in writing about this, says, and I quote: "Jewish and Christian standards, though, have changed since Solomon. And Islamic polygyny sees women simply as a commodity." Amir Hussein, Muslim scholar, on the other hand, says that 95% of Muslims worldwide think that monogamy is the way to go. And that you only hear about the bad from those who don't. The Shiites still see muta, which is a temporary marriage, as lawful, whereas the Sunnis don't. That's the marriage of convenience. Actually, muta means a marriage of enjoyment. The marriage that's supposed to last permanently is, on the one hand, the other. And say a man could end up, actually, if he sees women as a commodity, he could end up being married to more than four women in his lifetime, because those muta, those marriages of convenience or enjoyment, are temporary, and they have to have a time limit on them. Anywhere from a minimum of 1 hour, we have another word for that, but a minimum of 1 hour to up to a year or 3 years. And then, I mean, and you make that arrangement, it's a social contract, it's done, and then they move on. Well, you're free to marry another woman in that marriage of convenience. Now, that's the Shiites. The Sunnis don't see that as proper. The Sunnis see it as a dishonorable use of one of God's creatures, women. Muslim men can marry the people, other people of the book. That is, Muslim men can marry, even though they're still called kafir, which is a non-Muslim, and it's a derogatory word. However, if they marry other people of the book, such as Christians or Jews, they are to convert to Islam, and the children are to be raised Muslim. You know, there was a point in time, and still in some very conservative areas within Roman Catholicism, that if you marry someone outside the faith, the children, you still have to agree that children be raised in Catholic Church. Although that's not the case in every situation. But for them, you must agree, or the marriage will not take place. However, no Muslim woman can marry kafir, a non-Muslim man. If she does, marriage outside the faith and conversion from Islam, not just women, but even men, conversion from Islam to another religion, even Judaism or Christianity, the proper way to deal with it, according to Quran and the teachings of Muhammad, is immediate death. That's why I think I shared the last week or the week before, might have been last week, the guy a year or so ago that was in from a Muslim section in Africa that was there looking for his sister, who had converted, had gotten married to kafir, had converted actually to Judaism. They married a Jew, converted to Judaism, and he was there to hunt her down, to take her back so that she could be put to death by the family under Sharia law.
Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of reminds me, not to change the subject, but maybe I was just out of the field, you know, she married the guy, came here and married her,
mm-hmm.
took her back to his country for a visit, supposedly.
Right.
And then didn't let him leave.
Wouldn't let him leave. Yes.
And she had to become a Muslim. And it was
Same thing. It is the same thing. Right. Right. That's what women are. If a non-Muslim woman marries a Muslim in this country, even Sunni, they're expected to convert. Out of those, out of the Sunni, Shia, and Sufis, the more orthodox would be the Sunnis. From Sunni perspective, the more orthodox would be the Sunnis. I would say the Sunnis are probably a little more tolerant, but they're still right of center. But if you're talking about radical orthodoxy, extreme conservatism, you'd be looking at the Shiites. Well, women typically physically have been more passionate, more emotional, not as logical, and men had the physical strength, etc. Men went to war. Men killed the animals. Of course, then they let the women clean them and cook them. Secondly, if you look at the book of Genesis, actually the man and the woman were created to be co-equal, to be partners. But most religions are male dominant as well.
You know, that's here in the United States.
It is.
All of them are part of the,
Well, some Baptists do. I mean, a lot of it goes back to cultural norms and the understanding that women were typically considered, you know, the people who had dominance and the people who were the leaders were the ones that were the strongest and the best fighters and all that kind of stuff, and that was the men.
Long ago, not too long ago.
Right. It was right. Because people are, unfortunately, people like to be in control and like things to go along with the status quo.
Wasn't that been that long ago? When was that way? Hmm? In the Baptist? Yeah. You know, men done all of that, all of
them. Although, if it weren't for the WMU, most Baptist preachers wouldn't be where they are. And as I've said before, Brother Stanley, even though he admitted years ago, or talked years and years ago about the fact that there was a woman preaching the night that he felt that he accepted his call, accepted Christ as his Savior and his call to preach, there was a woman that was preaching. But he will not allow a woman to serve as a deacon in his church. Because of... there are a lot. But you find that in a number of others as well. Muslim men, once again, state that since Abraham and Hagar were legally married, and Hagar was an Egyptian and Abraham was not, that showed that they were an interfaith and interracial marriage, and therefore that's why men can marry. Abraham married Hagar. It wasn't the other way around. But they claim it was a legal marriage, even though the biblical text seems to indicate that it was not. She was a concubine. So that they didn't get married. When it comes to sexual sins, adultery or fornication is wrong. It requires 100 lashes publicly, and it's supposed to be for both the man and the woman. They're both supposed to be whipped. The Hadith, the teachings of Muhammad, say that they can be stoned. That they can be stoned.
They're saying any woman can do it. I know I'm not the only best person here.
Hello?
I was raised in a family that I was never abused.
Right.
I heard a man that never abused
me. Right.
And I'm sure, you know, that women in the UK, that I don't...
Well, it's a mindset that we don't understand. Homosexual activity carries with it the death penalty within Islam. It is seen as a threat to the basic family structure and a threat to the social structure. Therefore, it must be punished by death. In some Muslim countries, honor killings still take place for adultery. Even forcible rape is considered adultery on the part of the woman in most Muslim countries because it brings dishonor and shame, which must be removed. Just a few years ago, just a couple of examples, 16-year-old Jordanian girl was raped by her brother. Her uncles decided that she should have fought harder, and it was a disgrace to the family, so they stood by while one of her other brothers was ordered to, and he slit her throat. If he's Shiite, yes. 2002, in Pakistan, a prominent Pakistani head of the family murdered his daughter standing in a lawyer's office because she had been accosted by several men and had not fought them off, and was acquitted because it was an honor killing. In Wisconsin, they're pushing for Sharia law.
Yeah.
That if you're Muslim, you don't go by the U.S. laws, you go by Sharia law.
Yeah.
Which is a literal and harsh understanding of Quran.
I think Muslims need to get work on that kind of
thing. Thank you. Thank you, Ed.
This is one of the reasons that, you know, you can't, because I know Trump did a lot of things, he didn't do it the right way, but I don't see we can stand up for that.
No.
Well,
I mean, you know, you can say we can't oppress religion and all religions are welcome, everything is, but when you get into the depths of that, and I think that's where a lot of people are ignorant on this, just to cover all dumb things, all religions are welcome here. And they don't even know what the religions are. Right?
Well, and I think it's the way it's practiced as well that, if a Christian man decides that because of adultery he's going to kill his wife, according to our laws,
oh,
Yeah, he's tried for murder.
Yes, sir.
No, it wasn't. Well, in fact, it wasn't always the case there was a fundamentalist landmark Baptist preacher in Texas back in the mid-1800s, and one day one of his parishioners came into the office. I've told you all this before. One of his parishioners came into the office, J.R. Graves, and started yelling at him about something he disagreed with that he said in his sermon, and J.R. Graves yelled back at him, and this guy yelled back at him, put his hands on his desk, and J.R. Graves pulled out a pistol and killed him right there in the office and never stood trial. By the way, the judge was a member of J.R. Graves' church. However, some people are seeing maybe a sliver of light in some areas. In 2002, two men in Saudi Arabia raped a woman at gunpoint. They were captured. They were put on trial and convicted of forcible rape with the intent to kill. And then they were publicly beheaded. So some people see that as a slight change towards women. Although, in a slightly different vein, speaking of Saudi Arabia, women are sexually segregated from men in many areas, but especially in worship. They are required to be fully covered anytime they are outside of their home or anytime there happens to be any male company in the home. And see, initially, Muhammad, dealing in the caravan business, he would have his wife wear the hijab, not the whole outfit, burqa, but the hijab, while men were coming to do business because he did not want them to lust after his wife and then try to get his wife to follow them, etc. But now in Saudi Arabia, women are required to be fully covered, not just the hijab, but the entire shooting match. And women are forbidden to drive cars in Saudi Arabia. However, in Saudi Arabia, there are currently more women in colleges than there are men. And just in the last 5 years or so, women are allowed to own land if it's passed down, that kind of thing. However, there are still those areas within the Islamic world where, influenced by the Wahhabis, who are extremely conservative, 17th or 18th century Muslims, fundamentalist Orthodox Muslims, who the Taliban, which comes from Talib, which means student of religion. So the Taliban claim they're students of religion. They do all these things based on their religion as an order from God. The Taliban is influenced by the Wahhabis. Many African regimes that are Muslim are influenced by the Wahhabis, and ISIS claims its heritage from the Wahhabis.
Are they that strict on their women's dress in this country? Because, you know,
some are.
A lot of the students, and one or two of them that we saw at this time of freeze and everything else,
right.
This girl, they pulled for in Clemson. I mean, she wore Western garb and everything else, but her people looked down on her?
The Shiites would. Some Sunnis would, some would not. It just depends. Just like there are different groups and different denominations that, wasn't all that long ago that you could pick out who the Pentecostal women were out in the store because they had the bigger beehives than everybody else,
yeah.
And the long dresses and that kind of stuff. Yeah. In this country, it's really kind of interesting in this country. Because you have some that refuse to wear the hijab, and then others that insist on wearing the hijab. And the hijab and the burqa were seen and are seen by those who follow teachings of Muhammad as, or they claim that it's a way to protect their women, protect them from predatory men and all that kind of stuff. And Quran does say that a wife should be covered so that the only person that ever sees the joyous parts are her husband. And when those men get to, when they die and they go to heaven and they have the 72 houris, or virgins, the word is houris, H-O-U-R-I-S, or virgins, they are very beautiful and delightful, and they are there not covered by the hijab or the burqa. Which then brings us to the question, is Islam a religion of peace? Muhammad himself said that there are two jihads. You know, jihad is a struggle. That's just what the word means. Jihad means struggle. And typically it's a struggle. The greater jihad, even according to Muhammad and the Quran, the greater jihad is the internal struggle against our carnal nature. The lesser jihad is to wage war and violence against other people. But the Quran and the Hadith, the teaching of Muhammad, allow for both. And since the goal, according to Muhammad, in those visions that he had with Allah, the goal of Islam is to get the world entirely under the proper rule of Allah, you have the house of Islam and the house of war. Anyone who will not come under the house of Islam is one then against whom war can be waged. Some, those who would like to take the Quran and read the parts about peace and tolerance and that there is to be no compulsion in religion as the primary goal because God is a God of peace and mercy and forgiveness. In fact, when they pray, they will mention that. And oftentimes they'll say to Allah, the great and the merciful, before some of the surahs or before their prayers. Those who want to read it and pick scriptures out of it, what they call scriptures out of it, towards peace, they still want every one of us to be in the house of Islam. It's just their methodology, unless we attack them. Their methodology is through challenging folks to read and through challenging folks raising questions against Judaism and raising questions about Christianity and that Jesus in here says Jesus never intended to die. In fact, Jesus did not die. It does say Jesus was born of a virgin. Of course, what's really interesting is Muslims that will raise questions to Christians, this says Jesus was born of a virgin, Quran. They believe Jesus was born of a virgin. And they'll say, why do so many Christians not believe Jesus was born of a virgin? Why they not accept it when it's in the Bible and it's in the Quran? So in some ways, you know, they hold to things that a lot of other folks, even in the Christian tradition, don't. But then again, there are a lot of things in this book that, and a lot of things in Muhammad's visions that you find in the Old Testament. And a lot of things that you find in the teachings of Jesus in the New Testament and about Jesus. So many Muslims, their goal is still, everyone will be in a house of Islam, or at judgment they will end up in hell. And they will use reasoning and questions, and they will read the teachings of Jesus, and then try and come back and say, well, wait a minute, when Jesus said, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, that he was actually saying God is one, and that he was not part of the Godhead, and therefore Allah is one, and Jesus was a Muslim. That's their interpretation, their take on that. And when Christians don't know the Bible and Christians don't know the basic teachings and Christians don't know the doctrines and they're confronted with those things, they get bumfuddled and those folks who say, we're going to take you over, but we're going to take you over by reason, et cetera, they think they've won the victory. On the other hand, you have those who see this as a call to violence against anyone who besmirches the faith, anyone who raises questions against the faith. Anyone who makes fun of the faith, anyone who threatens the faith. And a threat to the faith can be trying to overcome the land by war, trying to subdue Islamic countries, Muslim countries, or a war against Islam is to raise questions about their documents or to make fun of Muhammad or any of those kinds of things. Now, granted, every religion has those within it and has those periods in its history when it wasn't so peaceful. Christian church, the Crusades, the Inquisition. There were times within Judaism where kill them all, let God sort them out was the motto of the day. But ultimately the Old Testament and the New Testament come down saying we're to love folks and we're to bring them into the kingdom through love and grace and mercy. And turn the other cheek. These folks, if you say something wrong, not only do they not turn the other cheek, they're going to attack your cheeks. And so, we've run over and we don't have time to do this half, almost full page of stuff here on that. We'll pick it up after Easter with that question. And I want to read some things out of the surah at that particular point. But just know that Islam and the Quran teaches believers to take action whenever they feel the faith is threatened, no matter how that faith, they feel that faith has been threatened. Verbally, militaristically, or by making fun. Hassan al-Banna, 1906 to 1949, who actually founded the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, and who is the forerunner of al-Qaeda, said, and we'll end with this tonight, and then after Easter we'll do this one time and then move on. Allah is our objective. The messenger, meaning Muhammad, is our leader. Quran is our law. Jihad is our way. Dying in the way of Allah is our highest hope. And when you have that kind of, it's like, I didn't go. My draft number came up and I was 4F. I had friends and others who did go and I appreciate their service. But stories that I heard, stories that I read, firsthand accounts and other things and talking with folks who were in Vietnam, you could tell when the Viet Cong were being promised that if you die in this battle, you're going to have all these wonders, because they'd start building more and more coffins. Because they were promised those things. And they were promised greater things if you die for the cause. And, you know, and you could save money on those guys. You only had to teach them to land once or twice. But, while they were in training, after that, you just taught them how to take off. But it's the same thing there. They thought they were bringing the divine wind. Kamikaze means divine wind. Kami are the divine beings. It is that case where religion is oftentimes used for all the good it can do. Religion is oftentimes used by people who are selfish and think only of themselves and their ways in order to harm others.
You made the statement that they wondered why so many Christians did not believe in the Virgin.
Oh, I run across people all the time, and I've read over the decades. There are folks all over the place that raise questions and say it never really happened. And there's some of them say, well, it really doesn't. It's a metaphor. It really doesn't matter whether Jesus was born of a virgin or not. What matters is that God was with him and his message and the crucifixion and resurrection. And then you got others who say, well, virgin birth doesn't matter, but it's his life and his teachings and his sacrifice, and it doesn't matter whether he was physically raised or not. He was raised spiritually.
But if it's not the virgin birth, it's not God.
If it's not the virgin, if it's not the virgin birth, you take the incarnation out of it all.
And
it's just another highly religious Jew like David and Solomon. Yes, it does.
Because I'm a Christian, but I don't believe in a virgin birth, that
you can't have it by the way. Well, those folks, Edwards, claim that where Jesus became Christ was in the crucifixion, not that he wasn't Christ all along. I think they're missing the point.
It goes back to a simple sentence: with God, all things are possible.
Yeah. Boom. And I think they're grossly missing the point of God in the flesh. And how powerful God is and what God has done and will continue to do. But there are people out there who claim that they are, and there are people out there, Unitarian Universalists, who say, oh, we're good. Yes, we're solid Christians and we're Unitarian Universalist Christians, and eventually everybody's going to make it. We're making it through Christ, and some people will make it through, on Walden Pond.
Crucifixion, then when he rose up before Jesus with the crucifixion, you mentioned it.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was Gnostic Christianity that held to that. Well, they called themselves Gnostic Christians. They weren't, but I don't think they were Christian, but they... However, we have the good news. We have the good news that was witnessed by not only a number of women, but by disciples, and according to the New Testament, 500 people at once saw the resurrected Christ and heard what he said and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's based on witnesses. These visions were never witnessed by anybody but the guy that got them. But there were many, many folks that witnessed what Jesus did, witnessed what Jesus said, and witnessed the fact that Jesus was indeed alive after being crucified.
Praise God. 1, 2, 3.
It comes from a lot of diversification, not just, you know, one group.
Right.
12 disciples, you got to come here. I know it was gathered by them, but it comes from all directions.
Yeah, we. Yeah, there were multiple witnesses to all of this and from all perspectives. So. Well, thank y'all. God bless you. Go in peace, and I look forward to seeing you.